This is Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm awesome. And how are you?
I am good. I'm good, thanks.
Excellent. So here is another edition of Radical Love Live. I'm always grateful to be with you. And today we have a special guest, don't we?
We do. Today we're having a conversation with Jerusalem Greer, who is Manager of Evangelism and Discipleship for the Episcopal Church. Right. And a good friend of ours. We're happy to talk with her today. So welcome, Jerusalem. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So we're going to just jump right into the conversation and just talk a little bit about, I think when most people think about evangelism, they don't think about, one, they don't think about it being like managed and directed, but there's a whole history of evangelism, of tent revivals, people knocking on your doors. And can you just talk a little bit about what you do as in your role regarding evangelism?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Manager for Evangelism and Discipleship in the Episcopal Church. And the reason why it's evangelism and discipleship is because I don't think you can have one without the other. Interestingly enough, I was not raised Episcopalian. I was raised Southern Baptist, and then I was non-denominational emergent, and then followed the little Holy Spirit breadcrumbs to the Episcopal Church, found my home. And evangelism and discipleship were two words that really had to be redeemed for me in the Episcopal tradition, because I had really negative connotations about what those were based on my past. And in my mind, they were about recruiting people and then creating step mini versions of people, right? Cookie cutter. We're going to recruit people to be these cookie cutter Christians that looked and believed a certain way.
Right. Right.
And I was not about that. And yeah, so the Episcopal Church really helped me redeem the idea of evangelism and discipleship. And for me, and I think what we believe as Episcopalians is that evangelism is the sharing of good news of God in Christ and of belovedness and of belonging, right? And inviting people into belovedness and belonging in ways that they can hear, feel, see, touch, understand in their own context, in their own language, right? So part of the work of evangelism is learning to communicate that good news in ways that other people need to hear, receive that good news, and then, you know, be with them, hear their stories, share your story, not so that we create lots of mini me's, like mini Jerusalems or mini Michael Currys or whatever, but that we essentially can live into the idea of beloved community and the dream of God, right? And that we continue to share that belovedness across the world. So that's, to me, what evangelism is.
Wow. It's such a far cry from, I'm Episcopalian now. I grew up in the Church of the Nazarene back in Indiana, where evangelism was about finding, so first you had to find somebody who was a sinner. Like so there's automatically something exclusionary of, I'm going to find somebody who's doing something wrong, and I'm going to convince them to have this personal transaction with Jesus or with God.
Right.
And then they're saved. And then it's up to somebody else to disciple them after that. It sounds like the good news that the Episcopal Church is spreading has a very different shape to it than.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, growing up Baptist, I always knew we were, what Jesus saved us from was hell, or like hell. And that's what you were selling.
Fire insurance.
Don't go to hell here.
Go to hell. You're an awful sinner and you don't know it. And you need to know it. And then you need to be sorry about it. And then you need to have the transaction, like you're saying, so that you don't go to hell. And so that was like the motivation, that you could scare people into being evangelist, because you could like, you don't want to let your neighbor go to hell, do you? So you can do that. Mm-hmm. I think what this is more about, I think it's still about salvation, but I think it's more about salvation here. And it's about being saved from the hell that we create for each other and the hell we choose, the selfishness and the self-indulgentness and the othering that we choose, which then creates hell on earth for people. And so it is still about salvation, but that's what we're entering into. That's the good news. The good news is you don't have to live this way. The good news is there's another way to achieve wholeness and fulfillment and flourishing in this life that doesn't require you to other people. It doesn't require you to set yourself apart and live a fear-based life, right? There's a way to live a wholehearted life. And that is what Jesus has come and has continued to work through us to help us, to save us from. That's the salvation Jesus offers here and now. So
that is such a refreshing perspective. It's definitely sounds more like that kind of kingdom of God theology than what the theologians call penal substitutionary atonement.
Yeah. I can resonate with that as well. You just in your sharing about how you see salvation here right now in our current life resonates deeply with me because that's how I look at it. I'm not so worried about what's going to happen after this. I need to worry about how and how I live my life and how I involve myself with others when there really isn't any others, because I think of also true universal oneness, which is more of an abstract concept. I can go there. Not all folks can, and it's not even the point. It's the othering, though. It's the intentional othering that disturbs me the greatest, especially when I see it within the greater Christian tradition. And of course, it's in other religious traditions as well. It's just that othering. And then, of course, I see it monetized as well, not to call out any particular denominations, but that's how they run. And so what you're saying is very different. It's a different message all the way around, and that there is no othering to be done. We're all in this together, actually.
Yeah, we are. And that's, if you talk to a lot of Episcopalians, they love the baptismal covenant. And it really is like the to-do list of how to live a Jesus-centered life is those promises we make. But a lot of people like to leave out the first part of the baptismal service where we have to turn from evil and turn towards Jesus. And that's the part I like to show my Baptist mother, to be like, look, we make
a person. I renounce Satan.
You renounce Satan. We turn and follow Jesus as our Savior. Like, we actually do that, right?
We do that.
That makes her heart happy and she feels better about things. But we don't like to talk about that. And I think it's because we have forgotten how to talk about evil in a way that isn't scary or isn't like almost cartoonish or isn't associated with these shame-based faith traditions. And
amen.
But evil is still something we choose to participate in anytime we make someone feel less than beloved, right? Anytime that we choose to other someone. And so I think it's still important to talk about that. But again, to just look at it bravely and to look at it open-heartedly and to look at it from a perspective of I can make the choice here and now to not participate in systems, right, that continue to marginalize and exploit others.
It's interesting that you talk about like showing the covenant to your parent. I had a conversation not too long ago with my dad, who's from a very evangelical tradition. He was really curious. He's so in the Episcopal Church, when do you confess that Jesus is Lord? And I'm like, well, actually, every time we have a service, we run through the entire Nicene Creed and we go, every faith statement is all made right there. He's, oh, so you get saved every Sunday. I guess you could look at it that way, although I think that salvation is a lifelong process. But yeah, essentially, we
do
eat body, drink the blood, state the truth.
Yeah, confess our sins, right? Like,
I forgot about that part. Yeah, we confess our sins. We confess Jesus as Lord. Like, we're doing the whole thing.
We do have an altar call. It's called communion.
Yeah, come on up. Everybody's invited.
Okay.
Oh, that's great. It reminds me too, Jerusalem, you probably know somebody that Kelly and I know from the Cathedral of St. John in New York City, the beloved former dean, he's now retired, Dan Daniels. And anytime Dean Dan was in the service, he in his welcome will always say the same thing, is that everyone is welcome, they are loved, and they are home. He felt that was critical to say in front of any time that we were preparing for Eucharist, just to reassure everybody was entitled to be there and be equal. And I love that. I just so love that.
That's awesome. That's beautiful.
Yeah, and that was the signage at the cathedral was always, this is a house of prayer for all people. And I know that's something that is of concern to you, like signage, how you're presenting yourself to the world. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how evangelism even goes to that extent?
It does. And this is one of those, like, in the Episcopal space, the Episcopal world is like any world, right? It's its own little bubble to some degree. And so one of the big arguments that happens is the difference between evangelism and marketing. And Kelly, you and I share a similar outlook of that. they can go, they go together. Yes, they are different and they are important to think about together. Because I tend to think of everything we do as evangelism, and it is evangelizing something. Mm-hmm. It's evangelizing welcome, or it's evangelizing exclusion, right? Like, we are communicating a message. And one of the things that I'm real big on is opening our doors, and like literally opening our doors, not just like saying we have a lot of our churches, not all of them, especially not on the West Coast as much, but a lot of our churches have these beautiful red doors that mm-hmm. you cannot see through. Mm-hmm. And you can't see through them. You don't know what's happening behind them. They communicate that we are beautiful and closed, right? And that you have to be really brave to walk up to one and open it, not knowing at all what's behind it. And so I wish our doors were open more, or that we would put windows in them at the very least, right? I know some of them are very historic and beautiful and old, but at some point, everything has to be about communicating belonging and communicating the good news of God in Christ. So your signage should do that. The cards in your church, like we, having just moved to New Jersey a year ago, we have been visitors now at churches, and I've mm-hmm. gotten a whole different perspective. I've known some of this, but not knowing how to find things, not having any kind of visitor, like to have to ask somebody for a welcome card. It's just, if I want to sign up, there's not even a way. If I want to join your newsletter, there's not even a way, right? Like, you have to be so inside to even be welcomed. And it's, and so I just try to encourage people to have secret shoppers, essentially have folks outside your tradition who are your friends, visit your churches and be like, then tell me all the things. Like, and so it's been really, but the number one thing I would say is, let's please open our doors. Let's have lights on the buildings. This is another thing. I was visiting a church in the downtown and there were no lights on the building and I couldn't find it because it looked closed because that was happening in the back. So all the lights that were on were in the back, off the street, right? And when I mentioned something, they were like, weren't the street lights on? The city street lights. Mm-hmm. Like, the city is not responsible for illuminating your good news.
No, they're not.
This should be a budget item for you.
You should literally be beacons. Beacons on the hill, beacon on the corner, beacon in the middle of town, beacon in the field, wherever our buildings are planted.
We'll hide your light under a bushel.
That's right. But we do, because anyway, I could go on and on. But yeah.
So Jerusalem. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Mark.
So Drew, you bring up a very good point, not to make this all about me, but my journey and how I came into the Episcopal Church was interesting, shall we say. So it's no secret that I spent a number of years under traps of alcoholism and a variety of other issues. Towards the last couple of years, while I was still active, I knew I needed to find something because I was just so broken. And so I'm like, I'll go somewhere. And I thought, I've heard something good about the Episcopalians. And oh, by the way, I was also a very angry atheist. So there was that. So as an angry atheist who knew I needed to do something because like I was just in so much pain, I knew that the Episcopal Church was welcoming to the queer community, which I'm a member. And so I was like, all right, let me find something. Being the fabulous gay man that I am, I chose the Cathedral of St. John the Divine because, of course, it's huge and it's got lots of stuff in it. So I would go in and I would actually go to the 9 a.m. service there. And I would just, and it was always done up in the cloisters as well. So it was a smaller service. And I actually enjoyed that. But yes, I always felt a little like I didn't know what was going on, but I kind of like it. And I got the flow of things because of the programs and things like that. But in general, people just left me alone. Now, in that case, I think it was probably good for me. But to your point, nobody was really coming up to say, hey, or anything. I just did my space. And then when sobriety finally was handed to me, I found myself immediately back into that in a much different way to start the journey of reclaiming my faith, also get baptized, which I did in the Episcopal Church, like all of that. And so this work that Kelly and I've done together, it's all because of the amazing, I would call it amazing news, not just good news, amazing news. And the love that was given to me inside that community. Like once I was a part of it, this is what I needed. It was healing. It allowed me to reconnect and in a way that worked for me. And there was no
in a very opening and liberating way as well. There was, yeah, of course, there's our creeds and there is the core doctrine that we use within the Episcopal Church, but I'm free to also have my own beliefs and things. And that's what I love. To your point, I wish more folks actually saw how beautiful it can be inside our communities.
Yeah, there's so much beauty there and there's so much richness. And yeah, we just don't always do a, we make the assumption that, which is a very interesting assumption to make. And I think once upon a time, maybe in the 50s, this worked, but we make the assumption that people can see we're here. And if they want us, they will come to us. And I think we are living in a different time. The Surgeon General just put out a report, a multi-page report on the epidemic of loneliness. Actual medical concern. It's a mental health concern. It's a physical concern. And it actually has economic implications as well. Absolutely. So it's fascinating. Every church member, leader, person should read it. And so we're living in a time of extreme loneliness. And people want to be wanted and they want to be invited. And that doesn't even mean they will come the first time. But who doesn't want to be seen? Yeah. Who doesn't want to be wanted, right? It's like, I can remember being like a kid, like a teenager or like a preteen and being invited to a party that I didn't really want to go to, but I really want to be invited to it. Mom, say I can't go, right? Because I was nervous about what might actually happen, but I wanted to be invited, but didn't want to be left out. And in our baptismal covenant, we talk about honoring the dignity of all people. And I think part of that means like offering invitations, like honoring the dignity of their ability to say yes or no. And let's not make up their minds for them beforehand. Let's not be like, if they wanted to, they would come. We don't know that. Again, like I said, like you were saying, Mark, like you didn't exactly know everything that was going on at first. And a lot of people right now, anxiety is high, mental health, there's so much. So to walk into a completely new space all by yourself, where you are not going to know the liturgic aerobics, right?
The liturgic aerobics, I love that.
Handshake.
Yeah. It's, but to invite people to begin to say, hey, there's this place, or even just the invitation of, can I pray for you? It just signals to people, I'm a person of faith. And if and when you have questions, I'm here. But we have to do that first step, right? Like we've got to do that initial invitation, that initial acknowledging, that initial welcome for folks.
I have a little anecdote. When I was still in New York City, I was working in an ad agency that was on Madison Avenue. And I came into work one day and one of my coworkers who I didn't think of as religious at all, we didn't really talk about it a lot at work, came in and the first thing he said, guess what? I just got a blessing. And he led me over to the window and we could see right across the street was the Church of the Incarnation, where they do the blessing on the sidewalk. Like the priest comes out and has the little sign with the chalk, receive a blessing. And people from all walks of life, faith, no faith, would stop and talk with her and get a blessing. And people get excited about it, even if they aren't necessarily people of faith. So I thought that was an interesting example of the church spilling out onto the street rather than expecting the street to come inside.
Yes. Yes. Love that. More of that, please.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
That brings another question. Go ahead, Kelly. I'm sorry. I keep stepping.
Well, I was going to say the question attached to that is right now there are a lot of people who either have left religious institutions or just not interested in religious institutions, people who they might be spiritual but not religious, or and how the Episcopal Church is trying to reach those folks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's something we definitely think about or working at. There's different pockets of the church that are doing that better than others. I think it's one of those interesting places that we're at, because one of the things that's attractive to a lot of us, especially the Gen Xers who come out of charismatic, fundamentalist, evangelical backgrounds, are very attracted to the spaciousness that the Episcopal Church can provide. Mm-hmm. We love that. We love, because I think in part, because we are coming from, again, places that are very constrictive, but we've already made some decisions. Like we're already following Jesus. right? And so we can recognize that in the Episcopal theology and go, okay, they play with Jesus, so this is a good place. It also allows for questions, some other things. The interesting thing is then you have Gen Zs and millennials who look at us, and I know this because I have some of these people that I have birthed in my own life, right? Who say, you don't believe in anything because you believe in everything, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't find that attractive at all. They're like, I only want to join things where I know exactly what we believe and why we're bothering with this, right? Mm-hmm. Which is where you see social movements gaining traction. Like Black Lives Matters is very articulate about what they're about. Yes. Mm-hmm. And right. And so we can, yes. And there's not a lot of room for All Lives Matter too, right? No, that is not what Black Lives Matters is. It is very. And so I think we're at this moment, this interesting moment where we're having to reckon with both.
Yes.
Which is, how do we create expansiveness? How do we stay true to the expansiveness of our tradition? We are the tradition of the middle way, right? Mm-hmm. And again, continue to, and maybe even reclaim the fact that we are Christian. We mm-hmm. are a Christian church. We're not saying everyone has to be Christian. We're not that kind of Christian, but we are Jesus followers. And I think this is something Bishop Curry has begun to help us articulate, which is, we are actually Jesus followers. We don't need to be apologizing for that. We can show a different way of being Jesus followers, right? But I think we need to get a little braver about that and a little braver about, this. And I think that's part of our problem, but part of the challenge that's going on with our church right now is this identity crisis. Are we a spiritual but not religious, but with religious trappings, social club, right?
Mm-hmm. A little bit of that.
Then that, or are we radical Jesus followers? Mm. And I think this is the moment where we have to decide that. And I think we are deciding that. And I think that's why there's this bit, we're just in this moment, right? We're just in an emerging moment.
Practicing myself. I hold out great hope for our church. And I believe it from the moment that I became aware of Gene Robinson. So this, obviously, we're all well aware that started the great fracturing, as I call it. I'm sure others do as well, that people within the church started to ask the existential question, oh my God, is the Episcopal Church just about to crumble and completely just die on the vine? Or is it going to flourish because of what was the beginning of official recognition of somebody that's a part of the LGBTQ community? And of course, to hear Gene himself tell the story about how he and his then husband, Mark, had to wear a bulletproof vest at his ordination consecration, that was pretty incredible. Oh, okay. So the courage to do that, if our church could do this, we have the courage to do other things. And that's why I love being part of our, even in this transitional stage, is because of what we do. And we've made this radical commitment to folks like me that mm-hmm. we are honored, we're welcome, and we're equal within the church is going to do everybody. I say that because as somebody that's LGBTQ+, we are the most easy targets for the ones to get othered, right? Not that women don't. Like, there's othering and marginalization across the spectrum. But mm-hmm. and especially now, we see it right now. It's all about trans folks. It's all, and all of that. Like, there are folks who will use us specifically to bludgeon us, other us, in order to prop up their faith. And the Episcopal Church says, nope, we are in. We're in. And I think that's our livelihood. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we are all in on that. And that's great. We just had Bishop Gene at this festival that we did in Baltimore called It's All About Love. Mm-hmm. Go on and see him celebrate the Eucharist. It's his 20th anniversary of his ordination and to the Episcopate and his 50th ordination to the priesthood this summer. And that's one of the reasons we invited him specifically to preside over the closing Eucharist, because that festival, It's All About Love, that we got to have in Baltimore, it's this churchwide event. There's lots of videos online at the Episcopal Church website that you can see from that. We really wanted it to be a stretching moment for us, a moment that stretched us as a church in joy and in love, but stretched us in our liturgical imagination, stretched us and around evangelism, creation care, racial justice and reconciliation work to say, okay, who are we becoming? How is the Spirit moving among us now in this emerging moment? Who are we becoming? Especially because we're looking at a year from now, we're going to have a new presiding bishop.
Yes.
And Bishop Curry has been amazing and is such a gift, and he has been for this moment. But we can't hang everything on him and his amazing preaching, right?
Right.
He planted seeds. And so it's our job now to water and tend. And so that's really what that festival was about. And one of the reasons we wanted to have Bishop Gene there, because we wanted, he is so part, he what he represents is such a part of our story and such a symbol. And he'll even say, it's not just me, right? Like, he was just the conduit, the faith, right? That represented generations upon generations of this work and generations to come. And it was just, it was beautiful to get to include him in that. So
that is awesome. That's awesome. That I, it's interesting here. And I was going to ask about the festival. I'm sorry, I couldn't make it, but the rector from my small town church up here and some of our vestry members came back all charged up after having gone down there. So they were really glad that I told them about it. But it's great to hear you talk about some of the other things like the, your environmental care and racial reconciliation. Cause I do think that people get an idea of the Episcopal Church as either like Catholic light or, oh, that's the church the gay people get to go to, which is awesome. But yes, it's also about yes, and there's more.
Right.
So and it's great more to hear some of the broader things of what that way of love translates into in practical terms.
Yeah. It's really about beloved community. It's really about the dream of God. And that includes everybody. That includes the soil. That includes the sky. That includes the birds. That includes our siblings of color. That includes our queer siblings, right? And our trans, like everybody. That includes our straight siblings. It includes our laws, our government, right? It really is about all of it. And that's one of the things that I think we're really working on, is to show that holistic, that thing about faith and about following Jesus and his way of love. It is a holistic, lifelong journey that should engage body, mind, and soul.
Yes, we can, can't we?
Yes, we can. And we can stay there because it's safe. It's a lot safer sometimes than our heart or our bodies. And, but I think we're at that moment again where we have to say that's not good enough anymore. It's not enough. We are called to be, we are an embodied faith. We believe we're incarnational people. And we need to now live into what that looks like fully. And so what was beautiful about the festival is, I think, especially through all the workshops, we had like over 100 workshops, it was, and we're going to look for ways to try to share some of that learning with people even beyond, because it was so much and so good. But it was, not everyone's called to protest like around something, but there are other things you can do. So you could go to a protest. We had a protest chaplaincy workshop. That it was great, helping people learn how to be chaplains at protest and to fill those roles. But then we had this other workshop that was using children's books to do racial reconciliation work with adults, like that was led by somebody, right? So it's, maybe you're not a protester, right? But you are very pastoral, or you're very relational, and you want to work in these ways within your church community. And so really trying to, again, get out of silos, realizing that all this work comes together, that it's all the good news of creation care, the good news of racial reconciliation, the good news of storytelling, like all these things are part of the good news, and that we need to be working at them at every level, not just the sexy levels or the cool levels or the trendy levels. And if you're not called to some of those bigger, bolder, trending things, that doesn't mean there isn't work for you, and that there isn't a place for you and your gifts to do this work. But yeah, it was really exciting, and it was such a blessing to see the church come together in that way.
Sounds like such a good time. Yeah.
You bring up, thank you for sharing. I wish I was there now, and I do hope you put this out for folks like me who just went right over my head that this took place, because that's the stuff that is spiritual food for me. But in my own personal story, I have what I believe is a pretty clear call to service, and I'm doing it both through Radical Love Live and also something else I'm working on that's near and dear to me, about helping people reclaim their own faith and know their own divinity, especially queer folk that have been hurt by church. And there's a lot of things that I'm in the process of introducing to that. The point I'm getting at is when it comes to folks, especially within our community, Episcopal Church, but other communities, there's not a clear call to serve. They attend service, they worship, they participate in Eucharist. Other than like maybe a backpack program or something else, they really don't know how to serve their call because they don't know that we even really have called, but yet we do, because that's a part of this is, yeah, we're supposed to be like our own ministries. How are we doing those things?
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. And that's something we hear around, and there's different reasons for that, right? There's lots of different reasons. There's a rise of clericalism that happened where people think the priest, if you don't have a collar, you can't do it or whatever. And that's just not true. And I think most of our priests are like, please, yes, come suggest, take on some of this for me. But I think there is definitely some of that. But we do believe in the ministry of the baptized. It even says in our catechism, if you're an Episcopalian and you've never read our catechism,
you should
go read the catechism. It's in the back of the prayer book. It's one of the most beautiful documents that we have. And it talks about who are the ministers of the church. And the first one it mentions are the laity, yeah, which means the non-ordained.
Yeah.
We are the first ministers.
Yeah.
Not the bishops, right? Us.
Us.
You're the first ministers. I am not ordained, and I'm not ordained for a reason. That's not my call. I am a lay minister.
I didn't know that. Oh, yeah, no. That's awesome. Yeah.
I am a lay minister because I don't feel that is not my call, but I am a professional vocational lay minister, which means my profession and my spiritual vocation are together. And that is possible. But there are a lot of ways if your local church is not, and for whatever reason, you don't feel like you can break into that I know churches, they're complicated because they're run by people. And that's just part of the deal of humans. But there are lots of ways at the churchwide level. There are so many groups. There are so many online Zoom groups. There are so many trainings. I actually teach a course through Bexley Seabury is our online seminary for the church. And they have a thing called Pathways for Baptismal Living, which allows anyone, clergy or lay, to take any of these kind of continuing education types of courses. I teach one on evangelism. There's some on discipleship. There's some on all these different, but there actually are a lot of resources out there and a lot of communities and a lot of ways to get involved. We just have to break out of our silos a little bit, do some Googling. You can look up me. You can Google me and connect with me and I'll point you in the right direction if need be. But there are some really wonderful ways. I know it's going to be election season again before we know it. And our Office of Government Relations has a beautiful Vote Faithfully and a program and a poll chaplaincy program to help people volunteer at the polls, right? And go be poll chaplains. Yeah. And so there's a lot of ways to get involved and connect. And our churchwide staff is wants to help you do that. So come find us. Just Google us. We're there.
I love that. So I'm going to ask one quick question. Kelly, I know you have some, but I love your enthusiasm. And I'm going to say it's more than that. It's you have joy in what you do, clearly.
Yeah.
It's great to see somebody be able to live out their faith and their call. And you're certainly an inspiration in this.
Thank you. It's an honor.
I am actually through, like we've covered most of the questions that I had. It just like organically has come up in conversation, which is, I love it when that happens. I had one more question, and I think we've already hinted at it, but it's just, what's your vision for the future of the church? What do you think the church of the future looks like?
That's a great question. So I think, and again, don't take this as like official Episcopal Church opinion, okay? This is Jerusalem Grid. Yeah. I am not speaking on behalf of the presiding bishop right now. I need to make that disclaimer for the lawyers come for me. I really think, so we did this research, and one of the things I got to do at the festival is I got to interview Brian McLaren, and that was a really cool moment. You can watch that video, and I talk about this in that interview with him.
Love that.
We did this survey. We hired this company, like a surveying company, to do this huge survey in America. It's called Jesus in America is the name of the survey. You can find it on episcopalchurch.org. And it asked a bunch of different questions, had to do with religion, Jesus, lots of things. One of the questions it asked was, where do you most connect? Like, it was something around most connect with the divine are spiritually refreshed. It was that kind of language. I don't think Jesus was in that particular question. And we polled, and the way we divided people up, it was mainline Christians, even evangelical Christians, Catholic Christians, non-Christians, other faith, atheists. It was a big group, and we across, and then there were like, I think there were like 8 choices that you could choose from. So it was a multiple choice question. Every group chose outdoors. They connect with God outdoors, every group. And the majority of them, it was number one. And I think the future of the church looks like camps and conference centers. I think they might be our new cathedrals. I think it looks like Wild Church and Beach Church and Park Church and Garden Church. I think it looks like crowded tables in those places. I think it looks like learning to celebrate in backyards, baptisms and Eucharist and that sort of thing. I think maybe we go small before we go big again, because I think we have lost each other. And I think the only way to do that is to sit around fires and to cook s'mores and to tell stories and to pass the cup and to actually know what's breaking your heart and what's bringing you joy. And when I know those things, then I can fight for those things. I can advocate for those things. And so that's what I think the future of the church looks like right now.
Oh, I love that. So it feels like that kind of like community vibe that you would get from evangelical churches do that really well. Who's bringing the casserole over.
Right.
Yes.
But we're going to do it without, here's 20 steps to become the perfect marriage that looks like that's not true, right? We're going to do it in a way that says, if you're walking through a divorce, maybe that's the healthiest thing for your family. And we're going to walk through it with you instead of shaming you out of the skirt.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Said that so well. And it's a great, it is a great future. You mentioned millennials and Gen Zs, the Zoomers, and how they need very clear reason why to be a part of something. And I feel like your future fits that as well, because there's a clarity there that unfortunately an institution can be lost because you hear it, but it's ambiguous and it's big and it's everything else. And they're like, no, but really how it's not about it's not about them being selfish at all. They just simply, how do I connect and relate to this? And I need to see it in a almost a tangible, literal way.
So you have a whole generation that does not expect to be homeowners. And yet we think they're going to keep our buildings. Why would they join us just to keep our buildings afloat? With they don't expect to ever be able to afford to own a home.
Jerusalem, you speak truth there. I love the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. I love it. I love it. I love it. And it's so representative. It is the grand magnificence, right? That and the National Cathedral and, of course, Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. We Episcopalians have done an amazing job of building these fabulous structures. They're a building.
They're a building. Yep. And if they're not serving, if those buildings aren't serving, right? So my thing about buildings is keep your building, but you better always be repainting because they're being used so much.
Yeah.
You're serving. Mm-hmm.
There you are. Their applicability. Yeah. They're not shrines to the greatness of what is or displays of things. And again, I love the buildings. I find them sacred, but they have to have a reason. And this goes back to the the young folks, they need to see purpose. So. Yeah. We cannot cheat them of that. Let me ask you one other quick question as we're wrapping up about future too. And this is near and dear to me and my own personal projects. At what point does the Episcopal Church not only take the red doors out and replace them with glass panes so people can literally see in, but when do they really start stepping out and working on projects that there's just simply being with the community in the sense that to give you an example. So I have this vision, this idea of where we allow communities that don't typically intersect. So we're talking about the church communities and the queer folks who have left church, right? Mm-hmm. And they run in separate lanes and occasionally they'll come back in to church community, but probably not. What happened to me, I think is more of an exception, but point is that where does the Episcopal Church actually start to reach word, not for the purposes of evangelism, right, but just simply to be there and support those individuals and just simply be
to me, that feels future too. And that's a project I'm working on. I'm calling it Safe Souls, is the notion, because there's so many folks that, like me, I got hurt by bad theology. And it wasn't, thankfully, I wasn't a victim of abuse, but it was just crappy theism. And also growing up in the Midwest in the 70s in Missouri, and discovering that I'm gay, and oh my God, the only thing that was around me was Protestant denominations telling me that I'm going to go to hell or I better change. So that kind of messes with a person. And so that's, there's so much damage there, and there's just so much need and opportunity to show the good news without actually, without any ulterior motive, just simply just being what you are.
Yeah, no, I think that is the kind of thing that particularly is why discipleship matters. Because, and why our people need to be discipled as much as anybody. We need a reformation. We need a revival of formation in our church and discipleship, because we can't share what we don't have or what we don't know that we have. And if we never put language around why this matters to us, what God has done for us, then I think it's hard for us to go be, because we're already out in the world. We don't live in our building 7 days a week.
True.
Right? True. We are in the grocery stores. We are on the side of the soccer field. We are in the cubicle, right? We're on the subway, whatever it is.
Yeah,
we are in the world. But if we are not confident in our own stories, and we can't articulate how God is working in our lives and showing up in a way that feels as authentic as why I want to go see the Barbie movie or why you should go see Barbie, right? If we can't talk about Jesus and about our faith with as much excitement as we can talk about the concert we just went to or the movie we just went to or the meal we just had, right? The way that we do what you're talking about is that we just get more and more comfortable and in touch with and articulate about our own faith. And then we're there. We're already in the communities.
That's true.
Yeah. We just have to get a little better at that. And that's just going to take practice. It's like anything. It's just going to take some practice.
I like it. This is not an insurmountable challenge at all, that this can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It absolutely can.
I love your optimism and just hope. You are not, you're unrelenting on your hope, aren't you?
I am. I am.
So I love that optimism. We are at time. So I would love to talk all afternoon. But to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. This is a really uplifting conversation. I appreciate what you do. Appreciate your friendship. And it was a great conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It was great to connect. I hope we cross paths again. And Kelly, always good to see you. So thank you all so much.
Thanks, Melissa. Look forward to seeing you again, Jerusalem.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to radicallovelive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at kellywilson.com and Mark at markdilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.